This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is coming along to 6:08 and you're listening to the Evening Edition with Lynn. And, you know, as Selangor's water supplies are being restored after the, I don't know, after the panic really of last week, we want to look today at how our wastewater is processed and managed. So IS Selangor's corporate communication head, Elina Basri, announced that as of noon today, 75% of affected areas in the Klang Valley have regained access to water. However, public anger over the recent water disruptions hasn't exactly subsided. While netizens continue to vent on social media, there was a message circulating on Facebook claiming why that happened in the first place. And to boil it down, essentially, it said that the latest incident is due to a monopoly on waste management. It went on to allege that the government gave exclusive contracts to select companies that charge high fees to collect scheduled waste, and the factory that caused the latest disruption couldn't afford those fees to dispose of their waste properly. And as you'd expect, the government has responded. The Department of Environment has denied those claims. Its Director General, Norlin Jaffa, responded that no exclusive rights were given to handle scheduled waste in Malaysia. The government gave only one exclusive right to Kualiti Alam Sendirian Berhad in 2000 to operate the Centralised Integrated Scheduled Waste Management Centre, and that contract expired in 2015. Puan Norlin added that the department has issued licences to 406 premises and 343 carriers to ensure efficient waste management under the Environment Quality Act 1974. And I think, you know, when it comes to water and waste management, this is one of those things where it's always on the back burner. It's not something that people maybe actively talk about or discuss until there's a crisis. And then when there is one, when our water supply is interrupted for 2, 3, 5 days, that is when people want to know, hold on, why did this happen? Who... what is that factory doing? What is going on with our rivers? And so this show is, I think, a part of that questioning, trying to understand exactly how waste collection is handled in the first place, what's involved, how much it costs, and what it takes, I think, really to run it efficiently, because that's the key thing here, right? The idea is that we want to ensure that something like this doesn't happen again. So if you have questions on waste management or any thoughts you'd like to share, you can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. I'd also just be curious to know how you reacted, really, to the water situation in your house. You know, did you, when did it go off? What did you do? Were you one of the people, like me, you know, heading out to local sundry shops and trying belatedly to buy pails? Again, let us know your thoughts. After this, we are going to be speaking with Dr. Johari Jalil, who is the Managing Director of Senviro. So keep it here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Bombing frustrated minds, BFM 89.9.
It is 6:12 and you're listening to the Evening Edition with Lynn. And after the water disruptions that a lot of us have been through over the last weekend, with Selangor and the Klang Valley largely affected, we thought we would look at the root issue of this and talk about waste management. You know, how much it costs, how it's being done efficiently, what it's going to take to ensure that something like this doesn't happen again. And so again, if you would like to share any thoughts or your experiences with the water cut, I always love hearing other people's water hacks. You can call us at 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. We're now crossing over to Dr. Johari Jalil, Managing Director of Senviro. Dr. Johari, thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, thanks, Lynn.
So for the uninitiated, and I think that's most of us, could you take us through the process of waste management and what it involves?
Yeah, so as per the guideline from the Environment Quality Act, EQA, so all scheduled waste generators need to register with DOE. So that comes first, right? And I think through that registering process, they will be, you know, they will need to describe the type of waste that they are generating, how frequent, what are the projected volume and all. And upon that process, then company like us, KA, will be able to engage with them and basically advise these waste generators, right, what kind of the most suitable treatment available, and also the pricing and all that. So once the pricing and the frequency of collection and all that has been agreed, and then the waste will then be collected by our compliant and licensed transporter to our prescribed premises. So prescribed premises here, what I mean is defined by those facilities which is licensed by DOE.
And generally speaking, are there set days of waste collection, specific days where you can expect the waste to get collected?
So generally, there is no set days of waste collection for us, right? So so just for your information, right, under the Schedule Waste Regulation, the waste generators are permitted to maintain their waste up to 180 days or 20 metric tons, yeah, whichever is higher. So between this period, is up to the waste generators actually to schedule the most convenient and the most suitable time for quality alarm to pick up the waste and then channel it to our facilities here in Bukit Mandau.
Once the waste is collected, whenever it is that happens, how is it then processed and what is the end outcome? I mean, I'm sure that it depends on what kind of waste we're talking about, absolutely, but if you could give us an example.
So you're right, Lynn, right? So there are different types of waste. And this type of waste will warrant a different type of treatment. So let me describe a bit the process on how this process channel to our facility, right? So we, as I mentioned earlier, have a registrar or a documentation in terms of type of waste from these waste generators. But then again, each and every time it passes through our facility, we need to sample it, right? Because hazardous waste are not, usually static. It changes in terms of criteria depending on production and stuff like that. So it has to go to a very stringent lab analysis for us to be able to determine what kind of the most suitable treatment, yeah? Whether it is, permissible to go to our landfill or whether we have to go through our thermal treatment plants, our scheduled waste to energy. For clinical waste, there is a specific treatment called microwave technology. Or even if it goes to the landfill, as I mentioned earlier, there could be a need for us to pre-treat it, right, in terms of solidification and in terms of treatment plan and few other various methods. So these are the typical process that we undertake to ensure that we have a proper method of disposal for this waste.
So you mentioned earlier that there needs to be a capacity. I think you said 20 metric tons, also a certain amount of days, right? But what happens when this process is delayed and it goes either beyond that metric ton number or beyond the days?
Right. So for the waste generator, then they become non-compliant, right? And this will be, this will be monitored closely by the DOE. And they have their obligation to proactively inform DOE in a situation where they are over capacity or they are not able to dispose the waste over prescribed time. So that's from the waste generator side. From KA point of view, obviously we don't like backlog, right? Because backlog of waste generally will impose some safety hazard. So I think they are equal mutual, how shall I say it, urgency for both parties, right, to dispose their waste on each side.
Now, I just wanted to, run by this number again, because in response to a social media post alleging that there's a monopoly at play, the government said licenses are provided to 406 premises and 343 carriers to ensure that scheduled waste management runs efficiently. So with that number then, 406 premises, 343 carriers, are there enough providers of this service in the country at the moment?
So, Lynn, I don't have a granular knowledge a bit about this 406 premises or 343 carriers that you mentioned, but sound like it's more than sufficient, right? In the sense that if you're looking at the projected, waste generation volume out there, and if you compare it to that number that you have mentioned just now, I think it is more than sufficient from my own point of view.
Now, talk to us about how much this costs, because that's something else that has come up in response to this, that the factory in question allegedly, you know, could not afford the fees. So what are the fees? How much does this whole thing cost?
So Lynn, again, it depends on what kind of treatment that, you know, that that is suitable for that type of waste, right? So certain waste, like I mentioned earlier, are permissible to go to our landfill. And this is the cheapest, or rather the most affordable, what you call this, waste of treatment, even though obviously it is not, it's not desired for us, right? So landfill will cost you something like about 50 cents per kg, Lynn, but you know, some other waste will warrant a more stringent requirement, right? So like I say, you need to be pre-treated. And the highest cost will be somewhere that you need to channel to our incinerators. And this can range between the $3.60 per kg. So the cost, like I said, varies from 50 cents to about $3.60 per kg. And of course, you times it with the volume that is generated by the waste generators.
And it sounds to me very much as if the onus is also on the waste generator, right, in terms of knowing, being compliant with what needs to be done. So what are the overall challenges of monitoring waste here in the country?
Well, first of all, I think, you know, I think the ability to monitor the waste generators, I think this is challenging enough, right? So depending whether they are compliant, depending whether they have adhered to the government regulation that they are properly registered. It also depends whether they are declaring their type of waste accurately, what kind of prescribed premises that they channel this waste and all that. These are the major ones that I can think of, Lynn. But having said that, I think DOE has the ability, right? They have a comprehensive system where they are actually able to monitor these waste generators internally from their side.
And in closing then, I think everybody is very invested in ensuring that this doesn't happen again. So other than imposing fines and harsher punishment, what other ways might there be for the government to empower industrial factories to conduct proper waste management?
Yeah, I think nothing can beat general awareness. I think stiffer punishment works. And if you look from, you know, the more developed countries like Europe, Japan and all that, so obviously they are stringent. Penalty and requirement does shape how that the waste generators in compliance to the regulation. But I think general awareness, knowing their value of their waste, whether basically they are able to extract value from the waste, right? They will channel this this waste into recycling, for example, yeah? Because this will again touch on the topic of affordability that you mentioned just now. Are basically health, right? And of course, with public participation, yeah, in terms of reporting illegal activities, be sensitive to the environment and all that. I think in general, all of this helps to a better, how should I say, a better compliance culture of our industrial waste generators.
Dr. Johari, thank you so much for speaking with us this evening.
You're most welcome, Lynn. Thank you very much.
That was Dr. Johari Jalil, Managing Director of Senviro, talking to us about waste management. And this is a topic that's come up because, of course, we have seen our water supplies here in Selangor and the Klang Valley being interrupted essentially by mismanagement in this area. And there has since been some conversation about whether or not it's because the waste generator, the factory in question, could not afford to pay for waste management services, whether there's a monopoly and so on. Again, the government has responded and said that that is not the case. But we did just want to get a look at what waste management entails and how it helps, you know, and how it is that we could stop this from happening again. So we've been asking you for your thoughts on this. And a lot of it is, I think, more to do with the larger question of waste and regulation. So, for example, we have this from Kim Kun Boon, who says, before licenses are issued by the local council, if there is a requirement for scheduled waste disposal, the government should charge a flat monthly fee to the factory similar to the household waste collection by the council. And that's an interesting point. I think it's also about ensuring that if businesses say that they are going to to run, or they know they're going to generate a certain amount of waste, I think that there needs to be proof that they can actually make those payments, or that they can actually afford to schedule those waste management disposals, because otherwise it's kind of just edging into non-compliance right at the very beginning. We also have an anonymous comment saying, crisis prevention is always better than management. Why did the authorities allow industries to operate so near to the rivers and raw water sources in the first place? And to this anonymous listener, I wanted to read this not so much because I have an answer, but because I think that it's a question that everybody is asking. This idea of why it is that the factories are placed where they're placed is an excellent one. I mean, yes, they might need water for their business, but then the risks, as we've seen, are so great that it just doesn't seem worthwhile. We also have Michael saying, how about a whistleblowing reward? And again, I have no answer, and I didn't think our guest would either, but I thought that it was worth reading. Because, yeah, I mean, this is one of those things that is asked, although I suppose the counter argument to that would be it's our civic duty. And so, that's a good enough reason to want to whistleblow or to want to report these things. Again, we are talking about what happened late last week and over the weekend, which saw Selangor's water supply being restricted, being interrupted, and that was a result of poor waste management, or in some cases just out-and-out pollution. So we've been asking you for your thoughts. How did you handle or deal with the water cut in your own way? And if you have any thoughts or questions on waste management and how we could be doing it better, you can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Right now we have Licky Lee with Youth Knows No Pain, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.